Now, Wisconsin reported 5,922 new cases of COVID-19 today and 38 more deaths from the virus. That comes after the state set single-day records for new cases on Tuesday and Wednesday and continues an upward overall trend for cases, deaths, and hospitalizations. Governor Tony Evers and public health officials have asked Wisconsinites to wear face masks, social distance, and reconsider indoor family gatherings as we approach the holidays. At the national level, we passed another milestone for the first time this week with 100,000 positive cases confirmed in one day. A public health doctor joins us now for a look at the latest trends and to answer your questions. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about COVID-19? Are you curious about testing, symptoms, or how the virus spreads? Have you or your family been affected by COVID-19? And if you're working in healthcare and have a moment, we'd love to hear about your experience too. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Patrick Remington is a professor emeritus in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Remington, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thanks for having me again.
Well, we've been talking about this, Dr. Remington, you and I, since really the beginning of this outbreak. Looking at the latest numbers in Wisconsin and nationwide, what is on your mind?
Well, just when you think you've seen the worst, then tomorrow comes and it gets even worse. It's really remarkable how this pandemic, not only worldwide and in this country, but I think in particular in Wisconsin, has taken off and exceeded our worst fears. I when we were talking last spring with something on the order of 200, 300 cases per day, we thought that was a lot. And then in July, it was 500. September, it was over 2,000. And now it's 5,000, almost 6,000 cases in a day. And we're up to about 250,000 people in the state of Wisconsin who have tested positive. That's about 5% of the population. And when you figure that, you know, not everybody who's been infected has been tested, we might be 10, maybe 15% of the population has been infected with the virus. And as you mentioned, the number of deaths that come along with that, there are over 2,000 deaths. We anticipate by the end of the year, we'll probably have 5,000 people in the state of Wisconsin die from COVID-19. So those numbers are, you know, truly striking.
Early in the outbreak, I think around the country and definitely here in Wisconsin, there was a thought that this was something that was hitting big cities. I even heard from lawmakers saying this is a city problem. We're not so much worried about it in our rural part of the state. Could you talk about the geographic spread now?
Well, the virus doesn't care where you live. The virus needs to get from person to person. So anywhere people gather, whether it's in a big city or in a rural community, whether it's at a bar or at your home, as long as you're in close proximity to a person who's been infected and you don't take the precautions, either the person is not wearing a mask or you're not, or you're not engaging in hand washing or physical distancing, then the virus will be transmitted. So it was a matter of time before the virus that entered really through the large cities in Seattle was a result of somebody flying to Seattle. Same thing with New York, with international travel. So that's obviously how the virus came into our country. But once here, it's just been spreading like wildfire. In particular, I encourage the listeners to look at the New York Times map, which shows where the hotspots are. And the hottest part of this pandemic is right now in the upper Midwest, in particular in Wisconsin. We are just, you know, at 6,000 cases per day. That's 6,000. That's 6% of all the cases in the United States, and we're less than 2% of the population. So we are at 3 to 4 times the rate that the rest of the country is experiencing.
I want to turn to some practical considerations now, and a question I think a lot of people might have over the last months or in the days to come, the question of, should I get tested? And I'll give you a concrete example of me. This week I got a sore throat, right? Any other year, I wouldn't think twice about it. I'm in a pretty low-risk group. And so in my mind, I don't want to be the idiot who wastes medical resources getting tested for something I probably don't have. But I also don't want to be the idiot who doesn't get tested and spreads the disease, you know, to my household. How do I, and how does anybody in similar situations, weigh that question of, should I seek out testing?
Well, it's a great question. I think that advice has changed. Early in the pandemic, when testing resources were scarce, the recommendation was that, you know, simple sniffles or a sore throat wouldn't constitute a reason to come and get tested. You had to have fever, for example. Now that's not the case. You know, we want the percentage of tests that are positive to be low. It means that we're reaching out and finding not just the people who are really seriously ill and with symptoms, or even with mild symptoms. It means we're probably catching some people who are barely symptomatic, who might just have a runny nose or just maybe a sense of losing their sense of smell or taste. So that we want that. And you shouldn't feel bad if you go in with some suspicion of being infected and you get a negative test. That's good news in a couple of ways. It means that we are testing enough people to make sure we stay ahead of the virus. And for you individually, it means that you're not infected. So I wouldn't have the feeling that you've wasted resources. In fact, that's how we want to be spending our resources, to make sure we're not just having 30 or 40 or 50% of our tests be positive. That means we're missing too many people who have mild symptoms and maybe no symptoms at all.
Well, to spoil the ending here, I did get the test. I'm eagerly awaiting a result. We are talking about COVID-19, the latest numbers, and getting some answers to your questions and mine at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Patrick Remington with us from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Let's bring on a caller now. We've got Dennis in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi. I've heard something like if we're exposed for 15 minutes to somebody with COVID-19, or if it's a cumulative a number of 15 minutes in like a week. And I think that has something to do with viral load. I was just hoping you could explain that.
Dr. Remington, yeah, that exposure question.
Yeah, it's a great question. This is not like a switch which is either on or off. This is a question of having enough exposure to let the virus really catch hold and then cause a serious enough infection to lead to an antibody response and some symptoms, and hopefully not serious symptoms. And so the CDC has a guideline that is that says if you have 15 minutes of exposure to somebody who's been tested positive, and that can be at one sitting or it can be accumulated over, you know, some period of time, 5 minutes here and another 5 minutes there. So that constitutes exposure. And what we found is that the virus really needs to be present in a high enough concentration to lead to a significant risk of becoming infected. So, again, you know, to have the abundance of caution, if you're exposed to anybody who's been tested positive, I would recommend that you either call your healthcare provider or your health department and ask what they think about the exposure. Because, you know, we're not very good judges of whether, you know, we were actually 6 feet away all the time, the type of air circulation, was it indoors or outdoors, and also how long that might have been, whether the person you were exposed to, even if they tested positive, were they symptomatic, were they coughing or sneezing, were they wearing a mask. So there are a lot of variables, but I use this expression that dilution is the solution, and that if that exposure was outdoors and you were far away, and better yet, if people were wearing masks, then even if that person tested positive, you haven't had a significant exposure. But again, the other end of the spectrum is if you're indoors closer than 6 feet, people aren't wearing masks, and that's 15, 20 minutes or more, that constitutes a significant exposure and definitely should lead to quarantine and possibly testing.
Dennis, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Tom with us now in Milwaukee. Tom, hi.
Hi. I'm wondering, is there any information as to what the degree of reduction in the risk of contracting the virus if one is wearing a mask?
Great question.
Well, Yeah, that's a great question. And this is an area that's been of some discussion in the media and I think some frustration for scientists in that early on during the as the pandemic evolved, the sense was, the evidence appeared to be that masks were not very effective in preventing the spread of COVID-19. And then as people observed actual practice, what actually happened in communities and in barbershops and nail salons, is that the risk of transmission was observed to be less when individuals who were ill were wearing a mask. And so the early recommendation was that wear a mask to protect others, because you might be sick and not know it. And there's good evidence now that the virus is less likely to get into the air and to spread within 6 feet or even as an airborne contagion. And then as time went on, some observations were made that people who wore masks were less likely to get infected themselves. And so now the recommendation is you're wearing a mask primarily to protect others in case you're sick and don't know it, but also it seems to protect yourself from illness from others. You're less likely to touch your face or the mucous membranes in your face with your hands. And now, what's the exact risk reduction? That's really hard to know. Is it 50% less? Is it? It depends on so many factors. It depends on your symptoms. It depends on the kind of masks. You've seen some people wear masks, you know, on their chin, and it hardly covers the mouth and not their nose. Well, that mask isn't going to be very effective. Other masks are, you know, tight-fitting and made of, you know, the materials that an N95 would be made of, and those are going to be much more effective. But again, some masks worn properly is better than no mask, and it both protects others and protects yourself.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Dr. Patrick Remington, Professor Emeritus in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at the latest on COVID-19 here in the state and answering your questions. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about COVID-19, about things like testing or transmission, how to flatten the curve in Wisconsin, or do you have a personal experience to share dealing with the disease, maybe in your family or as a healthcare worker yourself? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our talk about COVID-19 in Wisconsin with Dr. Patrick Remington, Professor Emeritus in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Heather is with us next in Madison. Heather, hello.
Hi. I just wanted to emphasize and reinforce what I've heard you say now a couple of times, which is I've experienced healthcare providers who are not following the current guidelines, haven't made the mental switch that testing is no longer limited. And just because you don't have symptoms doesn't mean you shouldn't get a test. I have acquaintances who've received that from their healthcare professional. And then, even though I am a scientist, but not a healthcare professional, when I tell them, hey, your healthcare professional's not following the guidelines, then I get the well, blah, blah, blah kind of thing. So I'm a little concerned that there's some folks who aren't following it. Either they didn't want to hear it that way, i.e. the patient, or, you know, folks haven't made the switch. I think on both sides, I'm seeing some inconsistency. So I'd really like to emphasize, get tested.
Interesting. Heather, thanks a lot. Dr. Remington, is the message out there in the healthcare community that, yes, maybe we should be erring on the side of testing more people?
Well, I think Heather makes a great point. We are getting mixed messages, sometimes even from the CDC. I recommend that people, you know, this is a good time to be a smart consumer and to look to the CDC or Department of Health Services for guidance. And I think anytime the epidemiology and the science is evolving so rapidly along with the guidelines, that it's sort of a shared responsibility. I mean, we hope our healthcare providers and health systems keep up with the information, but sometimes it changes from day to day and from community to community. So, I think it's part of the partnership with your doctor to come in and share information you've heard and certainly ask. because things have changed. I can remember specifically guidance where if you didn't have symptoms, including a fever, that you weren't to get tested, and that's not the case now. And there are instances where even without symptoms, people may want to be tested. That has to do with your own risk of being infected, but also the risk that you might infect others. And so people are, we're all learning more about this virus, and sometimes you bring some of that knowledge, to the healthcare system and to your doctors.
Thanks for that call. Jean joins us now in Stevens Point. Jean, hello.
Hi, I have a question. One day last week, I suddenly lost my sense of taste, and later in the day developed some body aches and a headache with no fever. And I went in and got tested and tested negative. And according to my work protocol, I'm a healthcare provider, I could go back to work, but I chose to self-isolate quarantine for 10 days because I couldn't think of anything else that would cause a loss of taste without any other sinus issues. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are as to whether or not I was a false negative.
Well, that's a great question. And this is, a time when everybody's using terminology that, might not have been used before, the idea of false negatives. They do happen. No test is perfect. And so it's possible that for some reason, either because of the mechanical swabbing or just where the virus happened to be, that you were infected and the test, it turns out, didn't read as being positive. And so I think, again, your point being that the abundance of caution would be to avoid going back to work where you may be potentially infect others. No test is perfect. And if I were to be infected today, the virus wouldn't be discoverable until Sunday or Monday, and I might not have my first symptom until Tuesday or Wednesday. And so a lot of times people test too early, they get exposed, and they go in the next day and they get a negative test. Or, as we've heard in many situations, you test everybody, they all test negative, and then they go and play football or go to a party, and sure enough, somebody either was a false negative test or they tested before the virus actually began to be discoverable. So tests are not perfect, but I think generally, they're effective as a whole. But again, sometimes the information is not as accurate as we'd like it to be.
Thanks for that call, Jean, and good luck to you. Mary joins us next in Appleton. Mary, hello.
Hi, I lost you before. I just wondered your answer to indoors in cleaning house after the people have left. And I'm keeping to myself a lot. I'm not living a dangerous, risky lifestyle and going to bars or doing anything like that. Wash my hands a lot. And I do wear a mask, and I have a hard time doing that when I'm cleaning a larger bathroom. It's very difficult. So there's no way I'm going to wear it for 3-4 hours in a clean house. Not going to happen. Going to have to not work. So is it safe after somebody leaves? If so, how long should I wait?
So Mary, house cleaner, how could she be safe given that in some cases she says she can't keep that mask on while washing the bathroom?
Well, that's a great question. And, obviously, thanks for the work you do. It's really important that, this is a team effort. And our healthcare system includes not just people providing care to individuals, but everybody helping keep rooms clean and sterile. There's very little evidence that a virus would be on a surface and then become airborne again. And that's what you'd be concerned about. Once an individual leaves the room, even if they were infected, there is a slight chance that it's airborne, maybe for a short period of time. But again, that does not seem to be the main way COVID-19 is transmitted. So I would think that the key in cleaning rooms or anything, in cleaning house where you may have contaminated products or surfaces, would be to engage in good hand hygiene. Make sure your hands are washed. Sometimes the use of gloves helps. But that the use of a mask, again, the chance of a virus being on the surface and getting aerosolized in sufficient dose to cause an infection would be very low. So I think, unless you're, in an area with very poor ventilation with people who've been really sick, that the mask wouldn't be as important as good hand hygiene.
Thanks, and good luck to you, Dr. Remington. Just in 30 seconds or so, advice for the holidays coming up.
Well, advice for the holidays. I think we are at a point when people do want to gather, and I just think people ought to look at pushing the pause button and think about the risk, not just for yourself. For example, if you're a young person, you may have a relatively low risk. Still, 10 to 20 people have died in this state in their 20s and 30s. So it can happen. But think about the risk for others, and you may unknowingly bring infection to an older relative, and that would be devastating. So I think if you do gather, do so in very low-risk situations, use of masks, physical distancing, outdoors preferably. Today, fortunately, this week, we've had a reprieve. We've been able to spend a little more time outdoors. But if you do have to get together, consider quarantining for the 2 weeks prior, and basically that assures your family members that you're not infected at the end of the period of quarantine.
Thanks to Dr. Patrick Remington for joining us again today, answering your questions about COVID-19. He's a professor emeritus in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Find more Wisconsin COVID info at wiscontext.org.